The World in Words is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/theworld.
Hi, and let's see, what do I have to remember today? The political clout of Chinese language newspapers? Check. A writing system for the Shanzhou language? Check. Language and emotion? Check that too. Oh, my Lady Gaga? Check.
I love my Lady Gaga. Check it.
Okay, quick alphabet soup warning. This podcast and its grown-up parent, The World, The Big Show, are both co-productions of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH Radio. For my blog, with pictures and links that go with each podcast episode, go to theworld.org/language, or go to The World in Words Facebook page. And for many more language bits and bobs than I ever get to, follow me on Twitter. My handle is Patrick Ox, PatriCox. So today, a language in Zambia gets a writing system. Also, how just below the surface emotion, unconscious emotion, sways language, and many other things. And later on, there's a conversation with one of the world's most bubbly English teachers, Jessica Beinecke. Bubbly like this.
All of the gunk that comes out of your face. 眼屎, 在美语里面是 sleepy. 耳屎, 在美语里面是 earwax. 鼻屎, 在美语里面是 booger. 如果一个人是很 annoying, you are being such a booger.
She is, as they say, a phenomenon among English learners in China. So first, the power of the press. Here in the US, people speak English, mainly. In San Francisco, some people, well, a lot of them, speak Chinese. They read Chinese, too. And there are no shortage of Chinese language newspapers to read. So what happens when there's an election? Well, there just was an election for mayor of San Francisco, and the winner was, drumroll, Ed Lee, the city's first Chinese-American mayor. He'd been acting mayor, but he hadn't been elected till this last election. On The Big Show, we asked Monica Campbell to report on the influence of the Chinese language press on the campaign. She filed this story the day before Election Day. Here goes.
I always tell people, hello, my name is Kuei Xiao, but you can call me Jane, please.
Xiao, who Americanized her name when she came to the U.S. from China, reports in San Francisco for Tsingtao Daily, a Hong Kong-based paper that, like five other Chinese language papers, circulates widely through San Francisco.
Like covering the political and especially the elections.
And in this election, reporters like Xiao have power. Voting by San Francisco's large Chinese population, one quarter of the city's residents, may surge because of the ethnic Chinese candidates. David Lee, head of the nonprofit, nonpartisan Chinese American Voter Education Committee, says the strength of Chinese language papers here can't be underestimated.
The Chinese community has a very strong history of newspaper readership, and many of our senior citizens, for instance, retirees, read upwards of three or four papers every day so that they can get a full picture of what's going on.
While it's tough to measure the Chinese paper's exact influence over voters, the paper's election coverage alone boosts the awareness of Asian candidates and perhaps their chances. That's a factor not missed by mayoral candidates like
David Chu, president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors and a candidate for mayor on the November 8th election.
Chu says the influence of Chinese language papers this year may be especially noticeable.
Their readership is enormous. Every single day, we have tens of thousands of San Franciscans that rely completely, read every single word of the major Chinese newspapers in town. This is why I have a regular sit-down with the Chinese press every 2 weeks. This is why we are in very, very close contact with the Chinese press.
I just saw the signs of Jeff Adachi, Li Lianyi, of course a lot of Ed Lee.
Walking through Chinatown, reporter Xiao points to the candidates' campaign signs in Chinese. Xiao's paper, Tsingtao, is the only Chinese language paper to endorse candidates. Because the papers are all headquartered outside the U.S., there is some concern that they'll be seen as a foreign influence on U.S. elections, or that they'll ignore non-Asian candidates. Sean Lee, a 32-year-old editor at the World Journal, which caters to Taiwanese readers, says his paper doesn't back any candidate just for those reasons.
We try to stay neutral on political issues, so we don't speak for, we don't work for Taiwanese government. And we cover it in general, like every other newspaper does, and our political view is always, we don't take sides.
At the Tsingtao newsroom, a radio station plays music from Hong Kong. Editor Joyce Chen points to Jane Chao's recent piece about San Francisco election officials coming to Chinatown and says that Chinese language papers are providing a civic duty.
We encourage people to vote because we have to participate. That's how we, you know or understand what the democracy is. We can say, you know, we are a minority in this country. And to be have elected mayor, the highest position in the city government, there's a certain pride in that. And there's also just a way to show we can do it.
It's hard to gauge the real influence of all the Chinese language papers, but there's little question that they're being read a lot. Dan Chu, a real estate agent who moved to California from Hong Kong 30 years ago, lingers over a copy of Tsingtao at a Chinese bakery. He's not satisfied by the San Francisco Chronicle's small foreign news section.
Americans, they only talk about themselves. They don't talk about other part of the world. They don't talk about Europe. They don't talk about Asia. You know what I mean?
In contrast, with Tsingtao Daily, he says,
you look at all the pages, so many pages. You know, I get to see the whole picture of the world all the time.
It seems that if local papers want to be relevant to tens of thousands of potential readers, not to mention voters, they might have to change their focus pretty soon. For The World, I'm Monica Campbell, San Francisco.
Okay, across the world from San Francisco to Zambia. That's where a linguist from the UK has developed a writing system, an alphabet for a language that had never been written down before. Now, this is something that goes on quite a lot around the world. It's largely unreported by the mainstream news media. I don't exactly know why that is, but it may have something to do with the fact that the people introducing these writing systems around the world are nearly always evangelical Christians. They want an alphabet so they can translate the Bible into the language in question. I did some stuff on this in previous pods. Did an interview with the head of Wycliffe Bible Translators. That's the world's largest Bible translation organization. I featured that in the World in Words number something or other. 85. I'll post links anyway. And there's also in the following podcast, number 86, an interview with a woman who spent decades in Indonesia developing a writing system for the Berik language, which is spoken by just a few thousand people. In today's story, the language is Shanjo. The linguist, who's now retired from Cardiff University, is Paul Tench. And although it doesn't come up in this report, Tench is an evangelical Christian. Okay, let's hear now from Western Zambia and the BBC's Hal Griffith.
At the marketplace in Mongu, the air is rich with different voices. English is Zambia's official language. Many here also speak and write in Silozi. But for a population of around 20,000 people living near the border with Angola, the language they use in everyday life is Shishanjo. A Shanjo farmer describes his work with oxen. It's a simple narrative, but one which has helped give Shishanjo a written form for the first time. Dr. Paul Tench from Cardiff University asked a group of five local men to try and write down the words in their own language, slowly matching sounds with letters.
The men themselves have got a store of letters in their minds. They know what the letters stand for in English. They know what the letters stand for in Silozi, their regional language. And what I asked them to do was to try and use the letters that they're familiar with to represent the different sounds of the words and phrases that they were now beginning to write down.
The Shanjo have always been proud of their heritage, but after centuries of depending on word of mouth to pass on their language, they decided it was time to call for help.
Their neighbours had participated in a similar workshop earlier this year, and they didn't want to be left behind. I suppose also it's a kind of reaction to globalization, where English takes over and they want to preserve a sense of their own identity.
That pride in their heritage is borne out by the words of one of the first ever written documents in Chishanjo. It's read by Inyoki, one of the five farmers who worked on the project.
The Shanjo people were some of the earliest people in the Silawana area. The name Shanjo means they used to hunt animals. According to the stories of older people, the Shanjo came from the south.
As one of 73 languages in Zambia, Chishanjo's future is far from secure. But after a fortnight with Paul Tench, the group now have an alphabet and the beginnings of a dictionary, as well as a growing desire to see their words on the page.
The churches run with this very quickly, and so there is the sense of which, let's get a hymn book in the local language. Let's get a little bit of the Bible in our local language. And then the idea of primary education doing their first stages of education in the local language, because this is the language that the children think in and understand in.
The World in Words is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One audiobook to consider is the exclusive biography of Steve Jobs, written by Walter Isaacson and narrated by Dylan Baker. It's available at audiblepodcasts.com/theworld.
In a little bit, we have an American woman teaching the Chinese essential American English terms like badonkadonk. That's after Language and the Emotional Life. David Brooks, columnist with the New York Times, the Weekly Standard, commentator for NPR, among others. He wrote a book that was published earlier this year that you may have heard about. It got a lot of people talking. It's called The Social Animal, and it sets out to document how we humans operate in groups and how we're often motivated, that we often can't tell, by subconscious emotions, which has a lot of implications for the language we use. And maybe the language we use, the language that we've been using since birth, and so we're most comfortable with it, and there's the connection to the Zambia story, well, maybe we cling to that language irrationally, to its very sounds. Here's David Brooks telling the BBC's John Humphreys what he takes from some of the latest neurological research that's focused on how we behave.
We know that most of our thinking goes on unconsciously, below awareness, and some of this thinking is very peculiar. So, for example, people named Dennis are disproportionately likely to become dentists.
No.
People named Lawrence disproportionately likely to become lawyers, which is why my daughter is named President of the United States, Brooks. But some of it is...
There's not a bit of wind-up in this, is there? No. I just find that extraordinary. Honestly, if you're Dennis, you're more likely to be a dentist.
We have an unconscious bias toward things that are familiar. And so that's just one of the oddities, but on a more serious and more important level, how you do in life is often determined largely in the first few years, and it's how your brain is formed, how your relationships are formed. Do you have the ability to read emotional signals, to read patterns in the universe, in the landscape in front of you? And so a lot of what's going on unconsciously is quite important.
Oh, well, is it really quite important? Because by definition, if it's unconscious, we can't influence it. I mean, if we use our conscious brain to say, I want to be president of the United States, then we maybe can make it happen, but we can't make our unconscious do things that will help us, can we?
No, we absolutely can. Our emotions are really central to our thinking, but we have the power to educate our emotions. What art and music you listen to will educate your emotions. You have the power to choose what sort of environment you're in. If you go to the military, you are in one environment. If you go to the university, you're in another environment. And by changing your environment, you change your mind, change your behavior to change your mind. One of the Alcoholics Anonymous phrases is, fake it till you make it.
Except that it may work the other way, may it not? I mean, we may end up in the military because we are born, I don't know, militarily minded. We may end up as a musician because that's where our innate ability lies, not because we've encouraged ourselves to do it.
No, really, one of the things that we're finding is how plastic we are, how changeable we are. Even through life, even in senior citizen years, in your 70s and 80s, if you change your behavior, if you develop a love for music or you decide to throw yourself into music, that behavior literally wires or grooves your brain so you become much better at seeing the world in a different place.
Really? What's the evidence for that?
Well, let's take for an example. In one of the things that's really important is, can you look over a landscape and determine what's important and what's not important?
When you say landscape, you mean literally?
Literally. So, you know, my newspaper did a story about soldiers in Iraq who could look down a street and tell whether there was a landmine, an IED, down the street. And when you ask them, how do you know? They can't tell you how they know. They just say, I feel a coldness inside. But if you develop over experience the ability to closely observe, the things you see will become registered unconsciously, and you'll be able to do it by intuition. But it takes long practice and changing your behavior.
Right. So if you say to your 20-year-old son or daughter, you want to be successful, you've got to change the way you are emotionally, what's the most important thing that they should do? I mean, that's a very broad question, obviously, but...
One of the most important things you can do is learn how to read and attune to other people. We all work better in groups than we do as individuals. And the groups that succeed well are not the groups that have the smartest people in them with the highest IQ. They're the groups that take the most turns in conversation, the groups who can read each other's emotional signals better. And so I'm a middle-aged guy. I'm not particularly comfortable talking about emotion. My wife jokes that me writing a book about emotion is like Gandhi writing a book about gluttony. It's just not the natural thing. But even for middle-aged guys, attuning to emotional signals of people around you is probably the most important thing, because we are networked and we are social animals.
I wondered whether you'd say, because you quote in a book, you say, I tell university students that every course they take should be about who they're going to marry.
Right. Marriage is tremendously important. Joining a club that meets once a month produces the same happiness gain as doubling your income. And so we have a tendency to think of ourselves as rational individuals who are driven by economic motives. But in fact, we're social individuals driven by the need for relationships.
I'll second that, to a certain degree. I mean, I'm not sure why, but I know that I derive a huge amount of pleasure from meeting once a week for a Chinese class with three or four other students. If I was doing a one-on-one class, I would, in all likelihood, learn more, but I wouldn't enjoy it as much. There's just something about the group dynamic that's attractive. Also, on another of David Brooks's points, I used to be called Paddy by my friends. Paddy, podcasting, Paddy, podcast, coincidence. Now this.
大家好,欢迎来到OMG美语,我是白杰。星期一到星期五,我每天都会播出一个节目。
That is the voice of Jessica Beinecke, who's a 24-year-old American. She hosts OMG, !美语. It's a daily 3-minute video produced by the Voice of America, and it's aimed at helping Chinese speakers learn English. We ran an interview with Jessica Beinecke on The Big Show, but it got seriously cut down. There must have been some bang-bang in the news that day. So here's a much longer version of the interview. Asking the questions is The Big Show's Lisa Mullins.
Jessica Beinecke, translate OMG Mayu for us. What does it mean?
OMG Mayu means OMG, American English.
Oh, American English is the Mayu part.
Mayu, yes, yeah. Means American English.
And you know, the energy that you just put into answering that question is the same energy that's on your videos. How long have you been doing the show, and how did you get so excited about teaching American English to Chinese speakers?
Oh, wow. We started posting episodes July 27th. At our 3-month anniversary, we passed the 4 million hits mark on the Chinese web hosting site Youku.
How did the word get out?
We have a few other English teaching accounts here at Voice of America, and they helped retweet my videos in the beginning. But this one show that is about all the yucky gunk that comes out of your face really resonated with everybody. And you know, this human emotion, you never know what's really going to catch on.
Let's play a little bit of that video now. This is the one that you said went viral. The yucky gunk video.
Them attend all of the gunk that comes out of your face. 眼屎在眉里面是 sleepies. 耳屎在眉里面是 earwax. 鼻屎在眉里面是 booger. 如果一个人是很 annoying, you are being such a booger.
I love that last part. You are such a booger. Did that go over well?
It did go over well, and I think with great influence comes great responsibility. And after I taught that phrase, I mentioned, you probably don't want to say that to your parents. Just use that among friends, and it's just a funny way of saying someone's being annoying.
Yes, a little cultural context is helpful here. Okay, let's have another example of what you're teaching the Chinese. In this case, it's telling them how to apologize.
I apologize. I apologize. 对不起.
And you go on, because you like to focus on slang, with another way to apologize.
My bad.
Now, my bad is cool. I guess badonkadonk is cooler, but I don't even know what that means. Like, you have a whole video about badonkadonk. What is it?
A badonkadonk is your rear end. One OMG Mayu episode, I focused on working out. So I taught cardio and I taught different sit-ups. And I said, you know, my badonkadonk's getting a little big. I got to work out a little more. And
thanks for being such a good American ambassador, Jessica.
It's, you know, all young people, I think, in America know badonkadonk. And I think it's a funny enough phrase that they really appreciated it.
And so did you have to give some context to that? I mean, when you're translating American slang, muffin top and oopsie into Chinese, you'd think there'd be something lost in translation.
Yeah, I think muffins also are sort of foreign to our Chinese viewers. So I included a little graphic there, a muffin and then an actual muffin top.
How did
and
you include that? Maybe you should describe it.
I found graphics online and just threw them up there.
I thought you brought in a friend,
you know,
who had
right
a muffin
next
top.
To each other. Yeah. Oh, no, I didn't bring I didn't bring in a friend or anything. But yeah, they think these phrases are really funny. And I always remind them that this is fun English to learn.
Now, you're a Midwesterner. Where are you from?
I'm from Ohio.
How did you learn such, at least what sounds like, convincing Chinese, Mandarin?
I started freshman year at Ohio University coming out of marching band in high school, and I sort of abandoned music for journalism, and I was looking for a new instrument. And it turned out that Mandarin really, really fit. The four tones in Mandarin are just gorgeous, and it's a melodic language, and it really sort of sparked my passion for music in a weird way.
The four tones, interesting you call it an instrument. Like, the four tones, give us the four.
The four tones, so the word ma, you can say ma, 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 and the fourth tone is down, which is ma. And so you can call someone a mother, which is ma, or a horse, ma, very easily. So you got to be careful.
Talk about tough languages. Do you get feedback from the Chinese about any kind of mispronunciations of your Mandarin?
Yes, all the time. and I'm fine with messing up because I recognize and I make the point that we're all students. And I'm still learning, they're still learning, but I think that that's what makes OMG Mayu so approachable, because we're all so comfortable with making mistakes, because I think that's the only way you can really learn a language is being comfortable with looking kind of silly.
Now, by the way, you're a fan of Lady Gaga. You reference Lady Gaga in a lot of your videos. How does that come up?
Lady Gaga is a part of my slogan on my OMG Mayu Weibo, which is the Chinese version of Twitter. And my slogan is, "Ai shuo Mayu, ai ting Lady Gaga," which means I love to say American English and listen to Lady Gaga. And we are including Gaga. Number one, I'm a huge fan. And number two, when our young Chinese viewers say OMG, they don't just say, oh my gosh, they take it to the next level and say, oh, my Lady Gaga. So it sort of relates to the name of our show, and the vibe of our show is very upbeat and fun, and I think Gaga definitely fits that. So,
what, do they say it because you keep referencing her?
Oh, my Lady Gaga was pre-OMG Mayu. Everyone was saying that before us, which is one of the reasons why we wanted to go ahead and call it OMG Mayu.
In China they were saying that?
Yeah, in China they say, oh, my Lady Gaga, instead of just plain OMG.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm a Gaga fan, so not only do I recognize Oh My Lady Gaga, but I dance to Gaga at the end of episodes, and I think it just gets everyone excited for learning if they're smiling and dancing and singing with me.
Jessica Beinecke hosts Voice of America's OMG Mayu program. Good luck, and how do I say thanks in Chinese?
谢谢.
谢谢. Thank you.
谢谢, Lisa. Oh my Lady Gaga,
oh my... That's it for this time. See you on Facebook, Twitter, or theworld.org/language. Thanks for listening. Oh my Lady Gaga, 独自伤心忧